The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, if you suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
Most interactive sports talk show in Houston continues now.
What's happening, Paul? Most interactive show, and really enjoy that aspect of it. Y'all keep it up.
Get involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
This is a nice series win for the Astros over the weekend. A sweep! Sweep the leg of the Atlanta Braves. And it's not, you know, true vengeance for what took place in the World Series a little bit ago. But it's nice. You rallied from behind in each of those games. And take a look at what the Astros have done this year. 12-10. Not like the best start, obviously. You want a little bit more. But after the bad series against the White Sox, where you split it against a team that's not playing very well, why was there hype for Chicago going into the year? Was it based off of the hype going into last year? Feels like it was. I remember the top five storylines for baseball per Chris Mad Dog Russo was Chicago baseball? Huh?
I think it's because they're a little bit like the Chargers, where they just have like a lot of names that you're like, oh, that guy.
Are they?
That guy.
Are they?
Yeah.
Like they're the poor team in Chicago.
I guess. No, but they have, like, Tim Anderson and Eloy Jimenez. And, like, they just have, like, Andrew Vaughn. They just have, like, Luis Robert. They just have guys that you
they
know.
They have guys that
and
you recognize.
Dylan Cease.
They have the Southside uniform.
Yeah, and they got rid of I think most of it's that they got rid of Tony La Russa. People were like, people were like, this is a talented team, and Tony La Russa held them back. And now they got rid of them, so maybe they just bounced back.
Guess what? Sub-500 again to start the year. It's weird. Chicago as a baseball city.
It's a great baseball city.
Outrageously terrible. Like, imagine having two teams not win a World Series from 1908 to what? 2016?
05. Everyone forgets the White Sox.
No. Series. I mean, I was because the White Sox was 1917 to 05, which is funny because everyone would do the 1918 chant with the Red Sox. It was like the White Sox were 1917. 1917 to 05, which is kind of funny, too, that the year, like, the exact same amount of time, I think. No, wait, like two more years it took them. So 88 years, I think it took the White Sox to break their own curse, obviously against the Astros. What a terrible baseball town.
I think it's a great baseball town because they're two teams that like have big fan bases and they just didn't win anything.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
It'd be one thing if Wrigley Field looked like Tropicana every night where it's just like, oh, no one goes there. Yeah, because they haven't won in 100 years. It's like, no, The Cubs are like one of the marquee franchises
somehow
in baseball,
right,
and they just win 100 years without winning.
It's because their stadium's old, too.
The Ivy, dude.
Hey, we play in a dump.
I will say the Ivy is a good marketing.
Oh, it's a great marketing move because they didn't have lights in the stadium until like 5 years
ago.
Another
great market. Well, that's actually probably a bad marketing.
It's a terrible marketing ploy, but whatever. It's fine. Hey, skip work. Go to the Cubs game. Watch the Cubbies. Anyway, sorry. We got sidetracked here. After splitting with Chicago, who's not playing well, and Detroit losing 2-3 to them, they lost 2-3 to Minnesota, who's in first place, but also 12-10 right now. So it's not like they have the best record. They took 2-3 from Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is 16-7. That's the best record in the National League right now. They've won 7 in a row, and they took that mark from the Atlanta Braves, who, of course, the Astros swept over the weekend. The Astros lost 2 of 3 to first-place Texas. Texas is 14-7. Again, it's too early to probably say, hey, this is something that they can sustain over the course of the year. They took 2 of 3 from Toronto. Toronto's 13-9. They're in third place, but they also took 2 of 3 from Tampa Bay over the weekend. And they swept the Braves, of course, who were 14-5 going into the series. Now they play the Tampa Bay Rays. They play Seattle fairly soon. There's one other team whose name is eluding me that they have to play before the end of this stretch. It's not San Francisco. There's Phillies. That's the other team.
Yeah.
So going to be a tough couple of games ahead, but I feel like they have improved throughout it, and they're doing it without Jose Altuve. You are learning that Mauricio Dubon probably needs to be an everyday player, and you, I think, have a pretty convenient place to slide him into when Altuve returns from injury. I think you can move him in to center field. You could move Michael Brantley back to left, and then you can, I guess, play around with what you're doing at the designated hitter spot and give guys a day off in the field and move people around, but also still keep them out there. And considering they're doing it where Jordan Alvarez has a lot of runs batted in, but isn't totally killing the cover off of the ball. I mean, he's making very clutch hits, but his average is surprisingly low. I was thinking about making a case like, oh man, all these clutch moments. Where do you think he's going to rank in the MVP conversation? But then I saw his batting average. He does have 6 home runs at the very least. Kyle Tucker has 5 home runs to open things up. It's not like they've been killing people, but they're doing enough with a lineup that's missing 2, I would say, key pieces. They've been missing one of those key pieces, Michael Brantley, for almost a full calendar year now. But doing this without Altuve and discovering that Mauricio Dubon can be this after his offseason transformation, bulking up with 25 extra pounds, I guess, over the course of towards the end of last year to where we are at right now, it's been really nice to see, very encouraging. And yeah, they're playing pretty well. I mean, a sweep of Atlanta, obviously you had to come from behind in every single one of those games, but that's pretty awesome considering where they are and considering how many injuries they are dealing with. And you can flex a little extra when your team is dealing with injuries and your team is still winning.
Yeah, the Toronto series and this series are like, okay, the Astros are kind of back. Like, this is the Astros team that we're used to watching, where they play, the schedule gets harder, and we have a quick like, oh, wow, schedule going to be hard. How are they navigating? And they just, lose 1 against Toronto, they sweep the Braves. It's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. This team won the World Series last year.
They just got to show up. It's like, now, hopefully there's not a sad end to this, but like with Boobie Miles in the Friday Night Lights movie, if I'm power ranking them, I haven't read the book yet. I haven't read the book, but I like the movie more than I like the show, and I love the show. But Derek Luke, who plays Boobie Miles in the movie, is just so awesome in that role. And there's a moment where he's like, yeah, I don't got to show up to practice. This is God-given, baby. That's kind of what it is for the Astros. You're assuming they could be down 5 runs. What's the amount of runs they would have to be down for you to tune out of a game? Wrong. You don't. You just don't. You have to stay watching at all times. They could be down 4-0 in the 9th inning. I'm watching.
I don't know. If they're down like 12, I think I'm not watching.
How many innings are left if they're down 12?
If the top of the first, they're down.
Wow, you're out that early? Damn, yeah. Dude. You got to take that hat off. That is stolen valor. You're not allowed to wear that hat. You can't do that. It's 12-0 in the first inning. It's just the first.
They need to score 12 runs.
So? They can score 12 runs.
They can. Have they done it so far this year?
No, but they could.
Okay.
With Jose Altuve healthy.
Oh, I wasn't factoring that in.
Yeah.
I was thinking of as presently constituted.
Oh, okay.
If Tampa Bay scores 12 runs in the bottom of the first, I'll tell you, I'm not watching.
Damn, dude. I thought you were a real fan.
I don't have to answer to you. Yeah. I never said I was a real fan.
Oh, damn. So that is stolen valor.
Yeah, it is.
I'm a more true Astros fan than you are, and you're from here.
Yeah.
Wow. What does that say about our society? What does that say about Gen Z culture? Because Sean Mapes is Gen Z adjacent.
Am I Gen Z?
You're close.
It's 27 Gen
Happy Z? Happy birthday on Sunday.
Thank you.
You're definitely close.
I think like most of the time I am on like the borderline of what you get. Like it's all like 96 or 97.
Gen Z age range.
But yeah.
Gen Z is 1997 to 2013. Birthday
okay.
Then.
So I just missed it.
So you just missed it. You are the youngest millennial.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You're part of the people, the chosen people. Mazel tov.
I'm happy to ruin baseball with you, Paul. I'll ruin baseball anytime. Listen.
Twitch gets so angry whenever we just say, the pitch clock is good.
Just know that like every misstep is a lesson learned. All right? Every setback is a chance to grow stronger. Embrace the struggle, baseball, and become unstoppable.
Yes. Do it.
Forward, period.
We got to talk about the Houston Texans social media post that Sean just showed us.
Oh, no, that was me. That was just off the top of my head.
You read that straight from Twitter because you're like, wait, what did they write? Huh?
All right, what was the stupid parts? I forgot.
The whole thing. That was it. Will Levis is slated to go second overall per Vegas. Does that mean the Texans are going to take him, or are they going to trade out of that spot? Plus, yeah, who greenlit that? Who greenlit that Houston Texans post? Paul Galancho, don't go anywhere.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
You're locked in with the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
I love our toxic Twitch. I'll be honest, I've been more toxic than Twitch today. I've been pretty violent with the words, and I apologize for that. I'll apologize on the air right now. If I end up getting canned because of today's show, well, now we know why.
And there's a home run by Castellanos.
Yes.
4-0.
Okay. Well, look, speaking of cringe, let's just try to figure out what the Houston Texans were going for here. So they tweeted out, it's embarrassing very often whenever they do anything. And the sad thing is, even if something is done earnest with thought behind it, deep thought behind it, the Texans are so bad that everything is going to be made fun of. And we will join in on that. Until they start winning, we will make fun of them. Because we should. And we can all have fun together, right? This is not a shot at the team or at the organization, but it's been pretty tough for a while. So they just posted this on a Monday at...
Exactly 8 o'clock.
Exactly 8 a.m. So this was scheduled. Do you think Jack Easterby scheduled this? Like years ago?
14 months ago?
He could have. You could schedule tweets very far in advance.
No, you can. Yeah.
I've scheduled one accidentally that like posted like a month later than I wanted it to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because it always starts you like 10 days ahead
right,
or something.
Five
yeah.
days ahead for some reason. Anyway, they tweeted out a image that looks at first like it's all black, but in the background you can see some Houston Texan reaching up his hands and catching a football. It's like very, very barely see it.
I think it's Pharaoh Brown. I don't know.
I don't think he's on the team anymore. I could be wrong, though.
I've just been naming different, different guys.
I will say, the silhouette does look like a tight end, and I'm pretty sure that...
C.J. Fedorowicz, probably.
Ryan Griffin.
Same guy.
C.J. Fedorowicz was a third-round pick. Jordan Akins. Could be him.
Yeah.
Tegan Quarantino.
It's not him.
Tegan Quintantino. Wait, Quentin Tarantino. Tegan Quentin Tarantino? No, it's not him. Okay. Anyway, with the caption of forward, failure is not an option. It's a necessity. Okay, so let's isolate the first part of this. Failure is not an option. It's a necessity. Are they embracing tanking? Is this them saying, hey, we're going to have a high draft pick next year too? Failure is not an option. It's a necessity. And look, I think SpaceX would agree with the Texans there, right? There was the rocket launch on Thursday. It blew up. But SpaceX is pretty big into the idea that every single failed launch can be a lesson learned.
Again, this first line, like, why are we tweeting this the Monday before the draft? This should have been... If they would have tweeted this, again, after the regular season... Complete, like, that's when at least this first line makes sense. But just be like, failure is not an option, it's a necessity. It's like, well, you have the number two pick in the draft.
Don't fail that.
Can we?
I don't want you to fail there.
Can we not fail that one?
Don't do that.
Is that one a necessity to fail?
Right. Like, why not post this after a loss? This makes a lot more sense after a loss than it makes sense or the after, Monday at 8 a.m. before an NFL draft.
Or after the win on in Week 18.
And yes, we are overanalyzing this tweet, guys, but look, would you rather us talk about this stupid-ass tweet or would you rather us talk about the stupid draft rumors out there? Like, all we know is Will Levis is the favorite to go second overall, either because the Texans are taking him or because they're going to trade that pick to some other team. We have no idea. No one knows. Like, no one knows. We're not going any further than that. This is something we can actually break down. Every misstep is a lesson learned. That is true, continues this post by the Texans. Every misstep is a lesson learned. Like David Culley, you learned after hiring David Culley, maybe we should hire someone that has some head coaching experience. Then you learned after hiring Lovie Smith, maybe we shouldn't hire somebody that's so old. And now DeMeco Ryans is the head coach of the Houston Texans. Every misstep is a lesson learned. You could do better than David Culley. You could do better than Lovie Smith. DeMeco Ryans.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to think of like draft misstep maybe. Like, yeah, we messed up with Kevin Johnson back in 2013 mm-hmm. or whatever.
They messed up not getting rid of Brandon Cooks the year before this past season.
That was a misstep.
That was a misstep.
And you know what? I hope we learned our lesson.
I think they did. You don't want to trade somebody too early, like DeAndre Hopkins for a second-round pick and David Johnson, but you don't want to trade somebody too late, like Brandon Cooks for what, a sixth-round pick?
I think a fifth and a seventh.
Fifth and a seventh, something like that, yeah. Every setback, a chance to grow stronger. So this is literally just like saying the same thing three times.
Which makes me think it's Casario.
Mm-hmm.
Because also this is meaningless, but keep going.
I'm bummed out that this might be Casario. I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I feel like this has to be somebody in marketing or higher up the food chain than Casario. Because Casario doesn't strike me as somebody who ever goes on the internet.
But he strikes me as someone who has like a calendar on his desk filled with
a written calendar.
Yeah, but filled with like inspirational quotes, like a daily inspirational thing.
See, if this was Jack Easterby, I would buy that.
I feel like he's an inspirational like just a meaningless sentence that he's like, wow, that is profound. And then he says 70 meaningless sentences every time he's in front of a microphone thinking it's profound.
If this was by Nick Casario, Sean, though, with that in mind, the entire block would be filled up and this would be seven paragraphs long. It would be paragraphs.
The Unabomber's manifesto. Yes. Just no punctuation. Just...
Yes. That's what it would be. So I don't think it's Casario. I think Hannah greenlit this, or Cal greenlit this, or their head of marketing.
Yeah, nameless, Doug. Faceless. Oh, Doug.
It's I forget Doug's last name.
I was literally going to.
I like him, by the way.
No, I was literally going to say like a nameless, faceless marketing guy, and then you actually said a name.
I forget his last name. It's one of those three. It's got to be, because I don't think the president would have signed up on this. No, I don't think he would have. And yet, we're overanalyzing this because this is more entertaining to analyze than actual draft picks. It is. You know it. I know it, too. Failure is not an option. It's a necessity. Every misstep is a lesson learned, posted the Houston Texans. Every setback, a chance to grow stronger. Embrace the struggle and become unstoppable. I don't like hearing embrace the struggle. I don't.
You don't like that?
No.
It's a little too close to embrace the suck for me.
Or trust the process. It is embrace the suck. I mean, it's what the Killer Bees mantra is. Embrace the suck.
But I thought we were done embracing the
suck. No, we're not. We're not. That's their thing. You can't just not embrace the suck anymore. Either you embrace suck ever or you never embrace it at all. That's how it works.
I wish they would stop sucking.
I do too. But they're embracing it. And when you embrace the suck, then all of a sudden, 5 years from now, you're going to continue to say, trust the process, like you're a Philadelphia 76ers fan, only to realize that, yes, your ceiling is the second round of the playoffs when Husky Harden decides to run out of steam and Joel Embiid realizes that he can't win the whole thing by himself. Anyway, back to the Texans. They put up a very cringe social media post, and we have been making fun of it pretty much all morning. And the thing that bothers me the most about it is you would just hope at one point in their entire history that they could have enough self-awareness to realize that everyone is going to make fun of them for this. That's all I want. I'm just tired of being made fun of. I don't even
do I even want them to be a contender again as much as I just want them to stop being embarrassing?
You just want 9-7 division champion.
I will go back to the Bill O'Brien era. Yeah. Does it matter, Brian? It matters to me, Brian. It matters to me. 9-7 and the AFC South Championship, that means a lot to me. We got so cocky and so arrogant. Oh, we're better than this. Are we? I mean, these last 3 years have proven that it could have been a lot worse.
I mean, the other, like, 15 years of Texans football has said
that's the other thing,
we're
too.
Not better than
You're
that.
You're right. They're like that. They've never... Oh, God.
There's, like, 5 good years. No, actually, probably even less than that. There's probably, like, 3 actually good years.
There's 2020. Check that. There's 2019.
Yeah.
2020 was
that was bad. That was
There's 2019. There's 2018. There's 2011. There's 2012.
Okay, so 4.
Like, those are the 4, like, legit seasons.
And in 2011, T.J. Yates was starting playoff games.
But 2011 counts because it's the first
Yeah, yeah, no. Mm-hmm. They were good. But then when you actually got to the playoffs, at least for me, I was like,
Why did they post this?
So do you think this means – this doesn't mean C.J. Stroud. This is what strikes me. I don't know why, but I don't think you post this when you're going to have, like, a conventional pick. Like, a pick that people expected you to make.
It does feel like that. And see, that's how little faith we have in them.
It feels like
this post
Tyree
means
Wilson.
The worst. It might just be that one of the people that works in marketing or something else is cringe AF. It might just be that simple. It could be that. But, like... The natural reaction to this is to just assume that they're going to bleep it up. It's like, hey, remember us? We're still the Texans.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got Tomiko, but we're still the Texans. Like, remember, bitch, we own you.
We're gonna post something that says that failure is necessary.
Oh.
And it has the words misstep, setback, and embrace the struggle. Those will be the words that we want to carry us into Thursday, the future of the Texans.
Hell yeah, dude.
The most important draft in Texans history. And we might have to take a setback for a chance to join get stronger. I think it means trade back. That's what I think. I don't know why.
I think you're right. I think that they're more likely to trade. Well, no. I don't know who's going to trade with them. That's my big issue. I have a hard time believing that there's a big market for the number 2 overall pick, unless somebody that is well beneath the Texans is like, I love Will Levis. And I don't think anyone's going to fall in love with Will Levis that much. Why? Because of the S2 test that he did pretty well on? Because of the shirtless selfie?
Because of
the banana with the full peel that he eats? Because of the coffee with mayo? Like throwing the football from his knees that hit the crossbar from the 50-yard line? You know, I have a hard time envisioning a team wanting to trade up into that 2 spot and the Texans getting enough in return to move off of it. Levis being the favorite to go 2nd overall, though, doesn't seem like, the more I think about it, something that would come as a result of news from inside the Texans. It seems like it's more from some idea that Levis is going to be the second quarterback
like
off the board.
The Raiders love him or something, you know, like something like that.
That would be very Raiders-esque if they traded a bleep ton of picks.
Yeah, I mean, I compared the throwing the football on your knees to Jamarcus Russell, a guy they picked.
Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call, to text. Don't shake your head. I'm speaking too fast. I'm trying to speed the show up.
I didn't think you would see the head shake.
I did. I did see it, and it hurt my feelings. It's the Sean Mapes Show with Paul Gallant next. Don't go anywhere.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Will Levis is the favorite to go 2nd overall in the NFL draft. And the Texans put up a very cringe post today, and it does have us all a little bit, I think, bummed out when it comes to football in Houston. I do think that Mega said it best for a lot of fans. Anyone else so tired of the Texans that they're actively rooting against them? I don't think that's a massive percentage of the population, but I think it's enough where it is a loud minority of fans here. I think others are just checked out entirely, and I don't think they're going to check back in unless they take a quarterback at some point on Thursday.
Wait, why are you saying that this is a bad day because of this post? Doesn't this inspire you?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, Sean. It shouldn't inspire anybody. What? It shouldn't even inspire them. They should have posted
forward,
this.
Period.
They should delete this. They really should. Now, it's too late, and they'll look like baby back bitches if they delete it.
That's the thing. You can't delete it now.
They should never have posted it. They never should have posted it.
Have
Whatever.
They deleted anything since?
I hope not.
I'm looking at it.
Because I can only imagine the carnage and the mentions of that.
No, I would say just keep tweeting stuff so this gets pushed further down.
Right, like, hey, how's it going, guys? Rise and grind. It's live, laugh, love, hard O version.
Oh, they posted, get ready for more of these moments this week, and then it's a video of Christian Harris getting drafted last year. That's it.
A video of Christian Harris getting drafted. So it's just going to be moments that are
get
from
ready.
Last year's draft.
Get ready for more
behind the scenes
third round picks getting drafted.
All right.
Get ready for some linebackers, folks. I don't know.
Well, they do need some linebackers.
I think it's more about like
defensive
get ready
linemen.
To watch. No, get ready to more watch more young men's dreams come true.
Oh yeah, that's
when
true.
They get drafted to the NFL and then watch their heartbreak when they find out it's by the Texans.
Defensive linemen, defensive ends. Defensive tackles, linebackers, inside linebackers, outside linebackers, maybe another cornerback, maybe two cornerbacks if you don't like Derek Stingley. Safety they actually might be good at. Yeah, safety they might be good at. How about that? Jimmy Ward, Jalen Petrie. But tight ends, interior offensive line, quarterback, another running back, wide receivers. Like it's a long... It's a long bleeping list. I just want them to get guys, but specifically a quarterback too. You can also weigh in on the Astros who swept the Braves over the weekend. And I mean, they've had a pretty difficult schedule to this point in the year. The first two series of the season, maybe not so much, but now they take on a Tampa Bay team that is 19-3. Jeez. Very impressive start by Tampa Bay. We will see just how good they are. I always feel like Tampa Bay does it with smoke and mirrors. They are essentially the 2023 version of the Oakland A's. 5:40 first pitch. That is insufferable to me. I hate the East Coast games and I hate the West Coast games. Why can't we just start it at a normal time? It feels like this year, too, we've had more strange start times than in years past. And it would be one thing if it was like 7:05 or 6:05 or something like that. But no, there's been a lot of like 40s and like 20s, 15s. It's strange. I want to know the rationale for starting a game at 6:40 Eastern time in Florida.
Is it because of the pitch clock, maybe? I don't know. But why would it be earlier?
That would be funny. I mean, we were touching on it a little bit earlier. So I went to high school in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is where the Tampa Bay Rays play. And when I was living there for high school, St. Petersburg was called Heaven's Waiting Room because there were so many old people there. And Sean, you had made the joke before the show that maybe it's so they can all get to bed early.
Yeah, get them out of there, get them home by like 8 o'clock.
But it's still 6:40. If it was 5:40, then I mean, 5:40 Eastern.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not 5:40 local. Yeah,
right.
That's right. That's right.
It is 6:40 Eastern. Yeah. It's still just strange because
still, yeah.
Their stadium is very hard to
9
get.
9 o'clock. That's pretty late for all the blue
yeah.
hairs.
It's Heaven's Waiting Room, bro. It is. So that series starts tonight. It'll be interesting to see how the Astros do. But, I mean, shoot, they swept the Braves. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. But we have been making fun of, I think, the Texans for the most part. Also, something happened today in the world of news media. We have a thought from Justin at 713-780-3776. Justin, what's going on? Justin. People who need
me.
Justin. All right, now we can hear you, Justin. What's up?
I was just calling in to see how you feel about your boy Tucker on your intro heading out of Fox News if you're going to have to change the intro up and whatnot.
No, that's that is like my claim to fame. the most relevant moment of my career then and probably forever, sadly. So, no, we're keeping that in, baby.
Will we have to change the Tucker Paulson character at all?
He might. Well, listen, he might become woke.
He might pivot.
He that might be the thing. He might be heading over to MSNBC. We don't know. We don't know.
I think we.
What
know.
Is happening? I think what is we going know. On? I'll tell you what's going on. Joe Biden is the greatest president in American history. That's what's next.
I feel like it's more likely that it's like.
Well, there's a big lawsuit.
Listen to my podcast. You know, like it's.
It could be that. It could be that.
Yeah, keep it unfiltered, unregulated by like corporate interests in my new podcast where I say basically the same stuff.
I do think that, and this is a just big picture all media thing, I think it is interesting that the more big names that leave, the more people leave these big mediums when it comes to consuming them on a daily basis. And it's another name that is leaving for a world that we're not even 100% sure of, but that does seem to be the direction for the most part of figures in media that have massive platforms. And I'm sure he'll do fine wherever he ends up next, too. You know, I don't really have a vendetta against him. I just wish he had called me or done any research at all with my little situation. But whatever, man. But it is interesting. I mean, we've already seen that happen at ESPN, right? When it comes to like the personalities that we see for SportsCenter and for other things. How many of those people on SportsCenter do you even recognize today? I'll be honest, zero. I don't know who.
As far as like the anchors.
Right. Yeah. Like I would need to think for a while to know any of the SportsCenter anchors by name. And obviously we know Stephen A. Smith. We know
Scott Van Pelt. Or you mean as far as the opinion people?
Well, yeah, the opinion people are the only ones that seemingly matter. Yeah. And I feel like if they were to leave, I think ESPN kind of realizes that there are certain people they can never have leave. Yeah. And I sort of wonder that, just thinking about it from that media perspective, I wonder if Fox is going to end up regretting this. Because it does seem like they would. Just a thought.
They probably just want, like, just someone that won't, like, They probably think that they can just next up on the assembly line.
But
like
they can't. They can't. Look, not the biggest fan, but he's a clear cut above the rest of the talent at that network. If you've ever watched that show, which I, unfortunately, visiting my dad, have been like subject to many, many times. But, I mean, the other ones, oh, boy. Like the guy, the blowhard who comes on afterwards, good God, that guy sucks.
Who's the guy that had Super Bowl commercials?
I don't know.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
It's like, it wasn't Godfrey.
I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole because I feel like we're already potentially turning off some listeners. This is just, it is interesting to me, though, because obviously I do an impression of him from time to time on the air. And now he might be woke, that character. Going forward, we'll have to adapt.
I still think that it's going to be like a YouTube show or like a podcast.
100%. It'll be some sort of podcast, YouTube, Patreon, or something.
But first,
like that.
A word from MeUndies.
Tucker Carlson for Blue Chew. Your penis not getting up anymore? Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, we wrap things up with a little bit of garbage time. Plus, I watched the boxing match over the weekend, and I have questions about boxing as a whole. It seems like weigh-ins shouldn't be as big of a deal as it reportedly was over the weekend. I'll explain what I'm talking about, or try to, with hopefully some help from real boxing experts. Next, it's the Paul Gallant Show. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
So I watched the big fight on Showtime this weekend. Gervonta Tank Davis won with this delayed, is it a paralyzer? It was a body shot that it took a while for Ryan Garcia to feel, and all of a sudden he just dropped to one knee. The ref gets in his face and is like doing the count inches away from his face, where he's clearly alert. It's not like Garcia's brain stopped working. He just couldn't stand up at that moment in time. So he fell to a knee. It would suck to lose that way. It really would. You think that you still can get up, but your body is not responding to it. I'd rather, and it would probably be worse both in the short term and long term, to get knocked out. But I think I'd rather get knocked out
than fall to a knee and like consciously see my body lose.
Yeah, because literally, it was like a liver shot or like right at like broke
whatever
a rib or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, like his body just was like,
just stop working.
Just no, can't do it.
Yeah. And I saw some comments about how Garcia is like an Instagram boxer, and it's not like Tank Davis is the best person in the world outside of the ring either. But what I knew going into this fight is that Gervonta Tank Davis has knocked out just about everyone he's ever fought. I think it was 26 of 28, right? Or was it 24 of 28? And now I think it's, you know, you add another list, another knockout. But can somebody help me figure out weigh-in? So Garcia was 5'11". Davis is 5'5". So it seems like a weight limit would be an unfair advantage to the boxer with more reach against that boxer. You know, like, obviously, if you're 5'5" and you're weighing in at 136 pounds, that was the catch weight limit that you had to weigh in at. And there was a little shoving match that happened. Davis weighed 135.1 pounds. Garcia weighed in at 135.5, his lowest weight since January of 2021. But there's this weird rehydration clause that had been sought by Davis in the contract for this fight. Both fighters had to weigh in again on Saturday without exceeding 146 pounds. Davis weighed in at 144.1. Garcia was 144.9. And I guess if any of those boxers came in over the 146-pound limit, they would have faced a six-figure fine. But a lot of people, I think, were arguing that Garcia looked emaciated and weak throughout the fight because he signed up to fight at such a low weight. I'm not a boxing expert, as you could probably tell from me talking about this. But it's kind of strange how big of a factor weight can be, and when the fight ends the way that it does, like that, with the guy essentially like getting punched in the ribs and that was it, you wonder, all right, maybe a couple of pounds of water weight or extra cushion, does that help out in that situation? I don't know, but I think a lot of people thought that Garcia was fighting nowhere close to at his peak where Davis was. That was the impression I got from those who actually follow boxing.
So what I know from, like, UFC is that there are guys that fight, like, well below what they actually weigh and, like, what they, like, walk around at. And what they do is they lose a little bit of weight in the, like, prep for the fight. And then, yeah, they do the weight cuts where they just don't drink water, don't eat anything for, like, however long before.
Which also kind of seems like cheating, too, right? It's yeah. Weird gamesmanship because you're weighing in 2 days before the game.
Yeah,
and then
all you have to do is weigh in, you know, in this case, what, 136, under 136 the
right.
Day before. And so in the UFC, there's no rehydration clause like the night or the day of the fight or anything. So guys just, they go back to eating normal and drinking water and then rehydrate. And then you have fights where, like, there's a guy who's clearly 15 pounds heavier than the other guy, and they're in the same weight class. And that's just part of the, you know, part of the game almost.
Possibly very dumb question. Obviously, if there's, like, an 100-pound difference.
Yes.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a thing. But should everybody be at the same weight, or should it be, like, a similar body mass index or something like that? No, seriously, though.
No, it's just a very funny idea of just like his BMI is, and like the weight classes are about BMI instead of pounds.
It's weird. When I mean, he's 5'5". Like,
yeah.
Tank Davis is tiny. I think it's kind of unfair that he gets to fight at that weight while the longer guy has to go. And again, I don't think that's the reason that he lost. Clearly, Tank Davis is an absolute like force out there, and he's got all those knockouts. He adds another one to the list. But I think it's kind of unfair for Garcia that he's taller, and the weight limit helps shorter guys more than it would help a taller guy. It just would.
I think he normally fights at a heavier weight. And just to make this fight, he went down. I
right.
think that's what he did.
Right, exactly. So, again, we're not.
So, at a certain point, it's like he. I mean, it's literally what he signed up for is to.
True.
To,
he signed it. It was part of his contract. You're right.
He had it in his contract. He thought it was a good idea to do it. So, at that point, I do understand why that you can't have, guys that are giant fighting.
Yeah,
little
I get it
guys.
Too. But I kind of want it. I don't know.
You would have loved early UFC. I think that was most of what they did.
That was what it was always. There's a part of me that thinks that how about everyone fights at their absolute peak shape, huh? And maybe that would make it really tricky, but it's strange. You have so many like underclasses too, like 120 pounds. Like, how are you that small?
Yeah, and so whenever you put a weight limit on a fight, obviously you want to be as heavy as you possibly can, and so that's what sets up this like perversion almost of the weight limit, where you actually weigh more. You just have to weigh under that number once. It's honestly kind of the opposite of what Bryce Young had to do at the combine, where he had to weigh in at 204 one time in his life, and then that's it, and he didn't have to do anything else. And that's almost what it is with these fighters, where they have to weigh in at 135.9 one time, and then they can fight at whatever weight they want, really. And so when it's boxing and they own more, or they have more control over how this kind of stuff goes down with the weigh-ins and all that, like, they can just keep throwing in clauses because it's Davis negotiating with Garcia's people instead of the UFC, where it's an overarching company. And that's kind of where like UFC has a little bit of like an
I'll be honest,
upper hand.
Yeah, I like that.
Because it's one entity doing what's best for the entire entity, which is better for the sport ultimately, where in boxing you have different people trying to do what's best for them, which is fine,
right?
But that also kind of harms the overall.
It's a wild
product.
West. Yeah. It's a wild west, and I guess Garcia is represented by Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I would want to be represented by Oscar De La Hoya again after that.
Oh, just the fact he signed. I thought you meant in general. You don't want to be
represented
by Oscar
De La Hoya. I'm speaking specifically on this. I don't know. If I was Ryan Garcia, I would probably be making some excuses for myself in this situation, right? I mean, don't all losers do that now? Isn't that what's in 2023?
Apparently, he was very gracious in his loss.
He was? Okay.
I just saw videos of him and Tank, like, after the fight, like, taking pictures together and, like, sharing each other's number or whatever. I don't know.
He is Sean Mapes. I am Paul Gallant. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. It's time for some garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
We have to play audio from an all-time interview on the television show Dateline. A Rhode Island fugitive who faked his own death and fled to Scotland was pissed in the middle of an interview with Dateline, insisting that he is a British man called Arthur Knight. His name is Nicholas Rossi. He's 35. He is somebody that left the United States, 100% did leave them, has tried to show that he cannot walk, and acted like he has this serious COVID infection that makes him need an oxygen tank now. And I guess he's been accused of sexual assault, among other things, which is why he fled to Scotland. Anyway, here he is in an interview with Dateline. This is gold audio.
A normal family, but thanks to the media, our lives have been interrupted. And we'd like privacy, and I would like to go back to being a normal husband. But I can't, because I can't breathe. I can't walk. People say that's an act. Let me try to stand up. Let me try to stand up. Exactly. Exactly.
What do you say to someone who believes that you are Nicholas Oliverdian?
I am not Andrea. I am not Nicholas Oliverdian. I do not know how to make this clearer.
What do you say to people who say these are crocodile tears? He's putting on a show. This is all an act.
Oh,
Andrea, no, that's a low blow. That's a right low blow.
It's a right low blow. Hey, at least he got that part of it right.
Sean and I were joking before the start of the show. This guy is a Rhode Island fugitive. His name is Nicholas Rossi. He is claiming that he is a British man called Arthur Knight. So he put no effort into this name.
Zero thought.
King Arthur Knight.
What is Ingleham? Oh, King Arthur Knights. Oh.
Yeah, that. That's me. I'm Arthur
Knight. That's a name.
Knight. My British accent's better than his British accent, and that is saying something.
Let me stand up.
Oh, no, I can't.
He also nailed privacy. That was a
privacy.
Good, yeah,
but people, everything else.
People say this is a bad accent. I don't know. He nailed privacy.
So
it's
look
right low below.
Yeah, that is a Dateline interview with Nicholas Rossi. You guys should look it up. That video was priceless. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'll tweet it out at Galan Says. Big thanks to our texters, our Twitchers, and our callers. I am merely Paul Galan. That is Sean Mapes behind the glass. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Monday. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace.
Let me try to stand up. Exactly.
Please.
Exactly.
ESPN 97.5.